I'm not German, comrade. I'm not going to discuss the French events per se. I have nothing to add to what has been published in the Militant and World Outlook, New York Times, and other sources that are much closer to the events than I. What I'm going to try to do is to draw some lessons from these events, those that are applicable for us here, as well as on a world scale. This year, 1968, is the 150th anniversary of the birthday of Karl Marx. And I can't think of a more magnificent anniversary commemoration than that which the French workers and students and peasants are giving in France today. France, which Marx considered the cradle of the revolution, a country with a long and honorable revolutionary tradition. Revolutions are the crucible, the acid test for all theories, program, strategy, and fact. For all of those who are or pretend to be revolutionaries. Years and years of debate and argument may ensue without reaching any general conclusion, until subjected to this test, the test of history. Now, for 150 years or thereabouts, Marxism has been refuted modified and changed in order to conform to the allegedly conform to the course of historical development. These theories also are being tested today in the course of this revolutionary uprising. Now, how do they stand up as against the orthodox Marxist analysis? Not too well, I'm afraid. According to the pundits of the New Left, the workers have exhausted any possibility for acting as the agency of revolutionary change, and so they set about seeking a new force, an elite that would substitute for the working class. The workers were written off not only in France, but universally in the industrially advanced countries, and especially in this country, as hopeless. as having been co-opted by the establishment, to use their jargon. That the organized working class was viewed as an obstacle and not as the locomotive of the so-called themselves Marxists. And yet they sought to destroy what to me is the very essence of Marxism. The question of change. Every other sector of society was capable of undergoing radical and progressive changes, seemed, except the working class. And if they changed, it could only be for the worse and not for the better. We have witnessed in our lifetime, in your lifetime, mine's been quite a bit longer, some rather startling changes. We have seen the change in consciousness of the Afro-American man, who, starting a few short years ago, achieved an actual revolution in consciousness, dating approximately from the year 1956 with the Montgomery bus boycott. Where previously, this very important section of the American working class, in the struggles that have taken place in this country, played a relatively unimportant role. They weren't part, except peripherally, of the tremendous radicalization and working class upsurge of the 30s. This ingredient was lacking then. There has been something of a change among the young people on campus. I recall not so long ago when this sector of our society was referred to as the silent generation. They become quite vociferous when they enter the answer. The Trotskyist movement has never lost its confidence in the ability of the working class to change. Because you're dealing here with, again, what is a very essential aspect of Marxism, that the material conditions of life determine consciousness, mold it, modify it. And unless you concede that capitalism has overcome its basic contradiction, and the basic contradiction, the social character of production and the private appropriation of the surplus product, among others, the very essence of the class struggle, unless you can see that capitalism has become capable of granting to the workers an ever increasing and higher standard of living, then you must conclude that the class struggle, the struggle between the exploited working class and the capitalist exploited, must continue, and become more acute. as capitalism runs into various economic, political, and social difficulties. Now, what is new, in quotation marks, about the French event has been the role of the student youth. In our experience, the student youth, although playing at times a very important role, have always played a peripheral role in mass revolutionary action. Now, here let me say that we still consider that they can only play a peripheral role, but in a special sense. That is, the decisive action, the decisive sector of the mass movement capable of accomplishing a basic, fundamental social change must be the working class. But here, the student plays a decisive role in sparking a movement that has assumed the character of the most extensive general strike in all of history, to my recollection. I can't recall a single instance that a general strike has, where a general strike has achieved such extent, extensiveness, such depth, such breadth. And you have to ask yourself why and how was it possible for the French students to play so important a role? I think that an important factor is that these students in France were relatively free of the infection, the cancerous infection of social democracy and Stalinism. That they had gone through some very important historical events in this generation. They had gone through the experience of the First Vietnam War, more important, of the Algerian War, of the end of the Stalin cult and the de-Stalinization campaign in the Soviet Union, followed by the eruption of the East German workers against the Stalinist bureaucracy, and then the Polish workers, and then the Hungarian Civil War, and then the Cuban Revolution, and the Sino-Soviet Rift, and the breakup of the Stalinist monolith. And more recently, the events in Czechoslovakia, where the students there played a very important role in compelling the transformation of that regime. And they were familiar with the character of the French Communist Party, the most conservative, the most bureaucratic party outside of the formed and degenerated workers' states themselves in the entire world. And as young people who were capable of dealing with ideas of, in an atmosphere of discussion, of debate, of confrontation, they rejected Stalinism and all of its works, as well as the reformism of the social democracy. And we saw a manifestation of that in the demonstrations themselves. Were the tendencies who played a conscious role in promoting the action were the so-called splinter tendencies, referred to as the Guevaras, the Maoists, the anarchists, who suddenly emerged from I don't know where and been dead for 30-odd years, and the last but not least, the Trotskyists. More than any, it was the young militants of the JCR who invested the movement with consciousness, who had a Trotskyist program, who were able to point out the necessary road to travel, advance the correct slogans at the right time, and despite their very meager forces, played a very important role in determining the character of the movement. I saw a report in one of the British papers, I think it was in the recent issue of referring to it as World Outlook, it's International, Intercontinental Press. Intercontinental Press. I prefer that to IT because IT has very bad connotation. Revolutionary history backwards and forwards and better than anyone else and could stand up and debate against any and all comers. As a tendency as a faction of the American Communist Party, that was our specialty. Our specialty was to study the history and development, theory and ideas of the Bolshevik Revolution and its subsequent usurpation by the Stalinists, and to arm ourselves with all of the arguments in order to stand up and do battle with what was then a very powerful machine. But they said, we know the Trotskyists are qualified in this sphere. What we don't know is, how are they going to act when they're up against the gun? What are they going to look like in action? And this question was answered in the Minneapolis strike in 1934, when the Trotskyists led the general strikes in Minneapolis, which succeeded in overturning the clothes shop, making Minneapolis a union town. This question was answered, at least to the satisfaction of many of those who felt an affinity for our comrades and our organization, and it led, as you know, to the fusion with the American Workers' Party. I think that was the decisive question that led them to the fusion between the AWP and the Communist League of America to form the Workers' Party in the early 1930s. Now, I read with some interest in it that several of these French Trotskyist groups, now under the impact of these events, have come together not in fusion or reunification, but for joint action, recognizing as they are that they are Trotskyists and seeking to hammer out a common line and a common approach to the problem of the revolutionary development. This, to me, especially in France, which above all has been characterized by splits and splits and splitlets, an indication of the prospect of a change in this direction also. A regroupment. Possibility for an objective discussion of differences while continuing in common action against a common foe. I consider this very important because this is just the sort of the embryo of what I think will occur in France in the period ahead. The Communist Party of France is never going to be the same. Never. If it doesn't splinter, it will fracture. There is already very important differences that are reaching right up to their top committee that we know about. Already you have defection and signs of defection. And the experience is not yet concluded. They still have the capacity for perpetrating some monstrous betrayals. But they're not going to emerge unscathed. And I think that there is the possibility of building in France in a relatively short period of time a revolutionary revolutionary formation based upon essentially of the program of the Fourth International and representing a regroupment of revolutionary Marxists that can provide a leadership for the development to come. Now, many things have changed. I think George quotes Pompidou. Many things are changed and are not going to be the same again. And among the things that are changed are the things we were discussing just as recently as our last term. Oh, there are going to be so many changes, not only, as I say, in the objective circumstances in the parties of the bourgeoisie or in the French Communist Party, but in the World Party of Trotskyism. We've had many discussions going on for a long period of time, and sometimes we have very great difficulty in convincing comrades of the correctness of our views. I'm happy to say that these events have done more than anything we could have said to drive home some of the lessons we've been trying to teach. And the World Congress is going to draw the balance sheet, not only of our discussion, but of the whole past period in Europe. I don't want to go into that now, but we'll have an opportunity in the pre-Congress discussion as co-thinkers to have our say. Now, what are the world repercussions of the French event? No country in the world is going to remain immune to the impact of these developments, whatever takes place. Certainly, if the result is the victorious conclusion of the proletarian revolution and the establishment of a workers' state, then the whole world will be turned upside down. But even if the movement is temporarily sidetracked, halted, the events that have already taken place are bound to create important repercussions throughout the entire world. One very important effect will be on the world Stalinist movement. And especially in Latin America, where they've already undergone some blows from the Castro tendencies, and will have to stand up under more as an aftermath of the French events. And what effect would it have on Castroism, the ideology of guerrilla warfare, as the only answer to the problems of the revolutionary development? There again, if I know what the situation is there, their susceptibility to ideas, their tendency to discuss the important developments on a world scale, this is going to be the subject of considerable discussion. How does this fit in with their theory? Which approximates the theory of those who have contended that the struggle in the advanced industrial countries is hopeless, that they would have to be surrounded by revolutionary developments in the underdeveloped world.
and then sort of invaded by a revolution from without. That is going to be a subject of rather extensive discussion, not only there, but on a world scale. Another important question for us, particularly, to which the French events have given at least a tentative answer, is the perspective of the revolutionary development here. Now, we've had discussions on this question before, and the question is posed, will the American working class have to undergo once again the experiences of the 1930s in order to achieve a degree of radicalization which would be the prerequisite for the organization of a movement capable of overthrowing American capital? That is, would an essential ingredient of this radicalization have to be a catastrophic depression approximating that of the crash of 1929? Now, the French Revolution answers no. We said before, theoretically, no. But we cannot anticipate a historical repetition of those events, and it isn't necessary. In our view, the high standard of living of the American working class is itself a revolutionary factor. Far from it being a sign that a working class is becoming co-opted into the establishment and becoming an obstacle, we say it was a revolutionary factor. Because historically we know that the workers will fight harder for what they've won, what they have already enjoyed, than they will for new concessions. They'll fight harder to prevent the enemy class from taking away those things that they already enjoy than they will for fighting for something new. And this American working class is going to fight for this high standard of living, for their television sets and their autos and their boats and whatever else they have. They're not going to easily surrender them under an attack by the bourgeoisie. There was no crash, there was no economic depression anywhere approximating that of 1929 in France. France ostensibly was enjoying a period of prosperity. But like all capitalist prosperity, a little more prosperous for some than for others. More prosperous for the bourgeoisie than for the workers. France was held up as the shining example of how capitalism can overcome its problems and its contradiction. In fact, De Gaulle was lecturing the rest of his cohort throughout the world on how they should do it the way we did it in France. What's the lesson we better teach the American workers? The fact that they have taken away from the French workers, I gather from just reading the accounts in the capitalist press, the fact that they have taken away from the French workers is part of their medical insurance. Anger and infuriated them even more than the
reduction in their standard of living through inflation, which they didn't like. The workers were discontented and dissatisfied, that's true, after 10 years of De Gaulle and Gaullism, and of the kind of leadership they had in both their unions and their political parties. But they saw no way out. They saw no possibility of conducting an effective struggle given the kind of leadership they had and the apparent power and strength of the Gaullist state. And to the everlasting glory of the French youngsters who challenged this authority, they taught the workers that is not so. They took on the French cops and the French special cops, and they fought them and beat them off not only once, but a number of times. And the workers looked around and said, these kids can do it. What did they sound of calling the papa's boy? That the papa's boy can do it. What about us French workers? We've got more power, we've got more strength, we've got more maturity. And so they took a lesson. The seemingly impregnable fortress did not look so formidable after all, and it proved to be not formidable at all. The movement spread like wildfire through the whole country. Now, what is this country? What impact has the student movement, operating primarily through the anti-war movement and the movement of Black Revolt, what impact has it had on the politics of this country? Nothing quite so sensational as France yet. But I think it would be a mistake to underestimate this impact upon other very important sectors of our society. Well, we know already that it led LBJ to throw in the sponge. We know it has had an effect upon the Democratic Party, just judging by the scramble that's now taking place among the prospective candidates. But what is more important to us? What effect has it had upon the labor movement, if any? We know that there has developed this very modest protest movement under the Labor Assembly for Peace, as they call it. Labor Leadership Assembly for Peace, a very cautious, a very modest, a very halting manifestation of protest and opposition to Johnson's war. But more important, I think, an event which probably she will recognize the significance of it. And that's the meaning with this split. It's my view that the Meany-Luther split is a direct result of the development of the radicalization of the youth and the black power revolt in the Afro-American community. Because if you analyze it, it doesn't make sense to accept the superficial reasons given by Luther or by me. All the questions about organizing the unorganized and more democracy in the AFL-CIO, Luther's biggest big fighter for democracy, so forth and so on, are just so much hogwash. What Luther is concerned about, and what he has recognized, is that there is in existence a social movement of revolt, which is separated more and more from the organized labor movement, over which the organized labor movement has no control. That this movement threatens to upset the entire political structure in this country, especially the coalition in the Democratic Party. To maintain the coalition, Luther knows he's got to have the black masses. He's got to have the intellectuals, he's got to have the liberals, he's got to have the youth. Otherwise, the Democratic Party coalition as it has existed since the time of Roosevelt is not very much longer for this world. It is precisely these sections of society who have been completely alienated from the organized labor movement by the policy of the Meany bureaucracy, the Meany wings of the bureaucracy, which in domestic politics stands far to the right of Johnson. And on a world scale in international politics, even a self-respecting British bureaucrat, French, Italian, German, when they see a Meanyite, they turn and run.
You know, he's an advocate of the policy of realignment. That is to drive the reactionaries, the aristocrats out of the Democratic Party, move the liberals from the Republican Party, and establish a union, two-party system, a liberal, a conservative party in this country. You cannot hope to do it if the coalition goes to peace and drumming. Or it takes the control of the labor state. It is a very interesting, significant fact to me that along with the announcement of their spoken, the spokesman for the UAW announced that they were going to form community councils to compete with or a substitute for the AFL-CIO labor council on a state and local basis. Now, you know what that means? Can you imagine what a community council in Detroit would mean? With representatives of the actual community council. With representatives from the black community, with representatives from Wayne University, from the student union, the other sections of our university, even for a very rough topic. I don't know how it's going to develop, but Now say this is an indigenous group, already on the moon path, that the movement in this country is having an important question, the most conscious question. Interagent social demigod. World brother. If there's anybody in the entire labor movement that can hope to co-op and train the Afro-American, the academic community, the intellectuals, and the left-wing liberals, he's the man to do it. Now, what is our task here? Very simple. Our task is to really examine over the radicalized sections of the American population, primarily in the black community and among the radicalized community. And in the process, to destroy once and for all the influence of Stalinism in the American radical movement. Stalinism still remains our main competitor and major rival. If there's any question about it, we confront them wherever we're actively in that movement. And we'll force them to change. They're capable of an infinite amount of damage so long as they're able to maintain an apparatus, and they'll maintain an apparatus so long as they receive and continue to receive material support from the country. Now, immediately we have four campaigns going simultaneously. Now, but this does not sound, this does not seem, or I should say, this is not as formidable as it sounds. That's correct. This is not as formidable as it sounds. Because all of these human things are integrated into one. There's the election campaign, the anti-war campaign, the student mobilization committee's fight, and the French support campaign. And if you look at any issue of the notion you will find that all of these items are included in almost every issue of the notion, beginning with the last issue, beginning with the so far as the Student Mobilization Committee fight, that's one that puts that against you, that we didn't have several weeks to go. But make no mistake about it, it's part of the same fight. It may assume the character of a defensive struggle. But here it is, we are talking about that. Even the object of non-exclusive action and deprivation of the democratic right to have a conscience to discuss it. You know, I think we work so long with them and so amicably that they can see, they became basically a bunch of goddamn prostitutes, you know, that had lost our capacity to fight. They thought they had governed us in all this right. They never realized that we were all bending over backwards in order to make a living room for them so they'd have it for us. Some place to spout off. And so we decided to take it out on the ship, and we didn't stand for that. And so the young farmers are going to have the opportunity of sharpening their claws. And opponents are not as formidable as the American capitalist class, but it'll come in handy. We'll teach our friends a few lessons, learn a few lessons ourselves. Very productive. The election campaign, so far has been the best election campaign in my memory. You know that, I don't recall. A national election campaign that has already achieved the results that we can recall. There are such scope. We're not much greater forces. Younger forces, yes, not much larger. Although his impact has been so great, as the election end and the campaign is, it hasn't really begun yet. Then it takes place in the phase of understanding that of our total struggle around the questions of war, of Stalinism, the prohibition of the revolution of the monster. Unfortunately, we're not yet able to extend the kind of support that I wish we could give to our friends down there in France. Still a very small organization, still primarily a propaganda organization. But there's one thing we can do. We can let as large a part of the American population as we can reach know what the Trotskyists are doing in France, what they have done. And the facts about these Stalinist betrayals we can help to accelerate their social consciousness. They're thinking on these questions, but that's nowhere will they get the kind of an outfit that the militias will carry. And it's not going to do us a damn bit of good to publish each week in the militias, to send five comrades over to France, to have them feeding us red hot material right off the griddle, along with a picture. It's not going to do us a bit of good to publish a 12-page militant unless we get the circulation, unless we get that paper out to the widest possible section of the students and workers of this country. I was glad to hear Don read that note from Steve. The response they got at this one point. This is an issue which, again, once again, we can go to work. We can go to the factory. We can go to the garment area. At any time, the place is swarming with workers. And so hundreds and thousands of notes. We can go to the factory gate. Unfortunately, none of them situated in the station of the headquarters. You got to go out looking for them in this area, but I would look for them and find them because I think they'll get a response to workers all interested in what's going on, because the same kind of discontent and dissatisfaction is seething in the American working class today. Whenever anybody else makes you believe that the workers are passing to Jesus, not at all. They have the same grievances, they have the same problems. These are not found with bureaucrats sitting on top of them. But when it comes to bureaucratic repression, strangulation, they don't see them in for the most hardened strong. Well, that's our problem. Our problem is to get this paper out and get it circulated. Get it sold. And get it to the workers, and get it to the schools, and get it to the high school kids. This is a great opportunity for us. Now, I've always been told that socialists do not what is possible, but what is necessary. It is now necessary for us to undertake four campaigns, go into one, and to do the most effective job we ever did. This is another test for us. Our capacity to respond to the call of the party for full mobilization of our party resources in the campaign. I listened to Mary Alice at the front, and she said that their perspective in YSA was to double their membership. By the time of the end of the election, or by the first of the year. Now, this is a fair of French events. This is before the French Revolution. And I think we have to lift our spikes up a little bit. Now, we can do it. We've got to do it. We've got to do it. Because we are determined that when the revolutionary eruption comes here, there will be that necessary ingredient, the revolutionary party, that will invest the movement with revolutionary consciousness in the struggle for power, workers' power. We have a little more time here, but not too much. The tempo of the French development is very rapid, but it will be as nothing when the American workers begin to move. Then you'll see a tempo of development of 10 HD, because the American workers do not have the baggage, the Stalinist and Social Democratic baggage to carry as the French workers do. This is a big advantage. They don't have that. They're free from this pollution. They don't have peace struggle to carry on. With the exception of their own union bureaucracy, but that won't amount to very much. And that's our aim. Our comrades in France have given us the big assistance in achieving and surpassing this goal of doubling the YSA and of the party. Because you build the YSA, you're building the party. You know, we've always preached to our European comrades and friends the necessity of doing it the American way. We get so upset when we see some of the organization methods and the way they conduct things. And we consider we're so efficient here and do things so much better. And there's a lot of speech. person. But comrades, from now on, the international slogan is going to be not do it the American way, but do it the French way.
Of a revolutionary
No. Now, our comrades and the students, they say there's no, they're not compartmented. They go to the workers with their leaflets, with their paper. In the discussions, they're involved from the very beginning. Young workers in the plants are involved with the students, collaborating with them in the direction of the dire straits. So that these slogans and these demands become part of this developing consciousness. Now, it doesn't result immediately in, say, in the recruitment of individuals. That's a more protracted process. I think what will happen will be a fierce internal struggle within the Communist Party and probably more expulsions or splits. Remember, the JCR itself was a result of an expulsion of a Stalinist youth. And throughout France, like throughout England or any country, you'll find thousands and thousands of workers who have gone through the CC, or expelled from the CC, or quit the CC. You'll find hundreds of thousands who didn't go through the mixture, the younger workers, and not part of the CC. Who they control through the union bureaucracy, the union apparatus, the union machine, which is itself a formidable thing. But under ordinary circumstances, but not so formidable under these circumstances, so that there will be a dialogue. There is already a dialogue. And these ideas are not confined to student circles. They're becoming the ideas of the movement as a whole, as demonstrated, as I say, in the account of the rapid transformation from purely economic to political demand. Now, how far this will go, or whether the Stalinists will succeed in bleeding them and through some protracted stalling, we don't know. Very difficult to say. I do know that our comrades are on the ball, that they recognize what the problem is, and they thought that they had set out very effectively, I think, to tackle this problem. Now, Bob, questions? I remember the one on the assassination. What was the first one? Yes, that's true. That's true, like they have for young students. And more so for students. We have some reports from Comrade Jan on the change in the composition of the Communist Party of both Italy and France, and the figures are very startling. The average age is something over 37, 38 years old in this party, and that they have not attracted the young workers, and in fact have lost sections of it. Now, their capacity for assassination, anybody with a gun can commit an assassination, I don't know. I don't think that it hasn't for some time been possible for the Stalinists to operate like they did in the 30s, the series of the Moscow trial, where the GPU itself would carry out these assassinations. I see no evidence that this practice still continues as far as the political police of the Soviet Union. Playing a direct role in carrying out the assassinations. They do have their strong arm squad, their goon squad. They use them at all demonstrations and protecting their headquarters, having them in plants and so forth and so on. But that is not a very effective defense against revolutionary ideas. Not while the revolution is going on. Your question was...
Yeah, I'm together with
Yeah. Well, all I know is what I need to read about the development in France in this last issue of it. That's about all I know so far as France is concerned. In England, a somewhat similar development is taking place. You get a report that the state cap, that is the state capital of tenancy in Britain, which is a large tenancy. In fact, the only tenancy in the world that I know of, the only place in the world where the state capital is having significant effect on that, both in the unions and in the and among the youth. They've launched a sort of a community campaign because of the developing crisis in Great Britain. They're calling for a fusion of all of the Marxist tendencies. What will come of that, I don't know. But our comrades are probing the possibilities of at least entering into joint actions with them, discussions with a view towards probing the possibility of organizational fusion. Now, I had a question on what will the anti-communism of the American working class be an obstacle in the development of the revolution here in this country. It is to a certain extent, but not significantly. Not significantly, because communism as such, and certainly at least the degree of Jesus God, and if they do it themselves, can carefully be portrayed, except by the most rabid psychopath, as a threat to the so-called free world. It certainly is a threat to the American government. They're becoming more and more known, certainly widely known among the radicals, and widely known in the organized student movement. And certainly among the black community, they're not looked upon as revolutionaries at all. And they'll be less so. Well, I don't think it'll be very, very effective. It has never been in a revolution. The red baby has never been very effective. Instead of the new revolution, I find it's serious upset. You could ask whether anti-Trotskyism would be a problem. Yes, it will. Some of the more backward workers. But depending upon what the course of the, how the revolution develops, that this will not be a decisive factor. In fact, it'll be a great help. You know, and then they begin to attack the Trotskyists as they're doing now, as being responsible for the extremist actions in France, and say, that doesn't do any harm. In fact, helps a little bit. And judging by what they've done in the past, the ruling class, when it's confronted with this kind of a crisis, and when it begins to be self-confident, is not noted for its reason. In fact, it doesn't really speak to it.